This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Kannison and Noel Lim. It is 6am, Wednesday the 29th of July. It's actually the second last day of the work week, right? Because Friday is a holiday. But I mean, I'm just curious, how many of us were paying very close attention to what was happening at the KL High Court yesterday?
What happened yesterday? What happened?
Yeah, what happened?
I'm sure.
Have I missed the party?
I don't see anything on the front pages of every single newspaper and the first four pages of every paper.
Yes, and also online, Guardian, the New York Times, Financial Times.
The social media, every social media.
One of our regular guests, Professor James Shin out of the University of Tasmania, was quoted in the New York Times.
Wow.
We made some big news yesterday. And in case you're not sure what we're talking about, Dato' Sri Najib Razak got 12 years and a 210 million ringgit fine in the SRC verdict. He was found guilty on all seven charges. And we'll be discussing this later at about 7:45 with Dr. Bridget Welsh from the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, really to find out the political implications from this, because there are going to be political implications. I think we've already seen YB Khairi Jamaluddin talking about the party over the person. We've got Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi talking about telling UMNO politicians to everyone calm down. We'll discuss this and see how we move forward from here. Definitely a big event, and the first former Prime Minister to get something like this.
Yes, so it's going to be a very interesting day of analysis, I'm sure, from all members of the media. We're going to be contributing later on, as Roshan said, at 7:45 with conversation with Dr. Bridget Welsh of the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. But in the meantime, in the next hour or so, as in later on after the 6:30 news, what are we looking at, Noel?
Okay, yeah, before we get too serious, we're going to talk about physical fitness, but in a more virtual world.
Physical fitness in a virtual world. That sounds great, Noel. But, you know, at 6:30, we also take a look at the global headlines. And although the verdict yesterday did make some global headlines, we're taking a look at other things like the concern in Germany over rising cases there. I think there are some concerns here as well. Spain's coronavirus cases jumping to more than 6,000 over the weekend. And some news out of the Philippines and Duterte. Always interesting when it comes to that.
And if you want to weigh in on our conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be talking about how our environments have changed with the advent of COVID-19. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Sunshine of Your Love by Cream, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So this morning, we're taking a look at a story from a website. It's called Wunderman Thompson. So Wunderman Thompson is a futures think tank, and they look at innovative solutions for problems around the world. And this article that is written here is looking at the advent of personal protective environments. Okay, so we've heard of PPE in the sense of personal protective equipment, but this article is expanding on the idea that the next generation of PPE is going to extend beyond the body. Because I don't know about you, right? Whenever I go anywhere nowadays, I come home, I worry about things like, you know, if I was in a somewhat crowded place, did I track anything home on my clothes? How am I going to, you know, make sure that I don't accidentally bring something into my house or in close contact with my family that I shouldn't? What about places like my car where I spend a lot of time without a mask? You know, how do you ensure that those environments stay bacteria or virus free? Apparently, this is something that a lot of companies around the world are now looking to address. So there are some car companies, for example, that are adopting software updates with new sanitation modes to disinfect their cars. And I'm wondering whether, you know, how many of these will actually catch on in a kind of a long-term way, even once we're done with the COVID-19 fears.
I have to say, when I read this article and I'm looking at all the examples that they quoted, and some of them have been even introduced like as far back as last year and the year before. And I'm like, wow, okay, where have I been, right? I think
we've been happily wallowing in our own filth.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And maybe in my, you know, way of cutting costs, I tend to overlook these things. But it's quite interesting. Like you mentioned, the car, antivirus car air conditioning. Yes, I think that has been around, but I think now it's going to be taking one step further. How do you even introduce things like UV light in order to decontaminate certain places, or viruses, right? Not just dust.
Yeah, you know, when we look at this, when we talk about how COVID-19 has changed the world, it really is also the post-pandemic era, right? How things have changed the way the way we work and live. It changes also consumer behavior. It changes the way what we look for when we buy a product. Now, something like an add-on of a air sanitizer in your car could be the perk you want to buy that vehicle, or what you're going to do inside. So right now we're all concerned about, you know, I know people personally who, when they go home, they throw their clothes in a specific laundry bag in the corner of the house and then shower immediately, because there are, even if it's unlikely, there are concerns over mm-hmm. tracking the virus into your house. There are always going to be these concerns, and these are going to go on for the foreseeable future, even when we have a vaccine, because it's going to take time to distribute that vaccine. So I foresee companies trying to cash in on this, whether it's actually helpful or not. I think, you know, it's kind of just putting that organic label on something. You can have like grass-fed chicken, which don't, you know, chickens don't eat grass, but you can have that label there and people will go and eat it or buy it simply because of that supposed health benefit. So I wonder whether you're going to have this sanitized label on it, or, you know, people are just going to try and cash in on this. It's going to happen.
Yes, like organic food, right?
Organic hand sanitizer.
I think I've seen that. And Lazada, very soon Lazada, you'll see a cheaper version.
I'm sure you can find anything online these days. So yeah, so this is an interesting question, right? Because when I look at some of the examples that this article gives, okay, one example is this kind of hanging sanitizer that you can put on your rack of clothes. It looks like those sock organizers, but instead it's of organizing your socks, you are putting in the clothes that perhaps you've worn that day, and it's going to blast it with some kind of mixture of antibacterial, antiviral rays. I have no idea. But the idea is that this is some kind of a portable sanitizing closet, right? And I look at it and instinctively I think it's a fad, right? This is a built-in, like long-time built-in, you know, reaction. It's a fad. It's going to be here and it's going to go. But in the wake of COVID-19, you don't really know, you know, because it is true that people are worried over, even now, still worried over whether or not they're going to accidentally bring in something into the family home where you are ordinarily very comfortable and very relaxed, right? Nobody wears a mask inside the house. So if suddenly the virus is introduced into your home environment, what are you going to do, right? So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how consumer behavior towards sanitizing products and hygiene changes after COVID-19.
Yeah, I wonder how long before Dyson comes up with a door frame, right, that sanitizes you as you enter the house. I mean, I can see that happening, right? Right now we have those windshields, basically, right, where it's just blowing air to prevent the cold air from going out. It's going to be a matter of time. I mean, right now, I think there are products where it's just a tablet with a camera, and that's what scans your temperature immediately so that you can enter the mall or enter the restaurant. How long before we bring that into the household? How long before the marketing starts pivoting into something like that?
Yes. My question is kind of, what kind of PPE would you guys use?
Yes, I think for me, maybe before we get into this extreme hour-long type sanitizing equipment in our homes, I can hear my mom saying, oh, why don't you just hang out and, you know, dry in the sun or something?
Just stand in the sun for 10 minutes.
Yes, that's right. But, you know, maybe just helping us deal with the SOPs, right? Just sanitizing, taking our temperature. If we could just walk past a sensor that will automatically capture our identity through facial recognition and also capture our temperature at the same time, and it will send you an alert should your temperature be higher than 37 degrees, and it also maybe alerts your HR department. And so you have all these alerts, right, without having to physically now take out your phone and then, you know, do all that scanning. You know, it just saves a lot of time.
Okay, so that one, we got to get Google to partner with the manufacturer and kind of put that together so that Big Brother can become even bigger.
Yes, we speak. They're probably doing it in Google X.
Actually, I think SenseTime is a Chinese, well, I think one of the biggest unicorns on earth. And we actually had them on the Breakfast Grill a few years ago. And they've been doing this facial recognition tech for a while. And it's scary how good they are. I would be lying to say if I wasn't paranoid for the next few days after that interview, just perpetually looking over my shoulder.
Was this the one where, you know, in China, they managed to locate a journalist within like an hour in China?
I'm not sure, but they are deemed to be the foremost innovator when it comes to facial recognition tech. And they do some work with PDRM.
I think you don't need to go so far. We have some local players as well who are looking into this kind of facial recognition technology and how to integrate it with temperature checks and location checks so that you can actually scan employees or students.
Yes, so I've seen that. So what I'm looking for is a quick scanning where you just have to walk past without even have to even look at the camera.
Yeah, so I'd be looking at them I'd be interested to see when these actually come down, you know, filter down to the individual consumer, right? So because a lot of these are still at the organizational level. But do let us know what you think about this. You know, how do you think our environments have changed with COVID-19? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're going to be asking, would you use virtual reality to help you exercise? Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Muhammad Ali by Faithless, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now, I think during the movement control order and lockdowns really around the world, the idea of fitness has had to change, right? Because most of us, if we do exercise, we go to a gym, perhaps we go to a class, perhaps a lot of people go running outdoors. But for a while, that wasn't exactly possible. So you did see a lot of gyms and fitness centers pivoting, and instead of classes, offering Zoom classes instead of physical classes, that is. But The Guardian's asking an interesting question. Which is, can virtual reality fit into this picture somewhere and help us to exercise? Because since most of us have discovered that we can actually work out at home, if we do decide to work out at all, that is, I know I, for one, have not been exactly keeping up with my fitness regimen. How would virtual reality help you with this? Because, you know, a few years ago, virtual reality was the next big thing. Yeah, when the Oculus Rift, I think, launched this new world of VR, of gaming headsets, it was thought that virtual reality gaming sets would be in the 80 millions by 2020. But when 2020 actually rolled around, that the number of VR headsets actually that had actually been purchased was somewhere in the realm of 20 million. You know, it's not really picked up quite as it originally was thought to. So, you know, would you guys post MCO be looking at virtual reality to try and supplement your exercise regime?
It depends on the cost of doing so. That's one for me. But two, let's assume if the cost is quite reasonable, I think to myself, you know, for someone who does not exercise a lot, this might be quite welcoming. And maybe, you know, with a VR, I would be able to exercise by the beach or maybe in Bali, you know, transport myself there, or maybe have Brad Pitt exercise next to me and giving me words of encouragement. Oh, keep running. Yeah. So, you know, maybe that will actually keep me going. But I would think that after a while, I might like to see my friends in there too. You know, you might get a bit lonely, right? I'm not sure how much conversation I can have with Brad Pitt. But yeah, so, you know, I think having some friends, maybe like both of you, in there with me, I think that would be quite fun.
Oh, that's hilarious. I don't know how viable it is in the long run, right? Because it seems very niche. And even when people were talking about how VR and AR and all this is the next big thing, it really is the application of the technology in the non-consumer sense when it goes into the big companies. Like if you look at some of the supposed big stocks to watch when it comes to VR, it's the big tech players, right? It's Facebook, Google, and Alphabet, sorry, the same company, Apple, Intel, Qualcomm, the chip makers, the infrastructure, because what it does, it plays into their feature set a little bit more. It's a supplementary add-on, a value add to a much larger ecosystem. So I remember years ago, Microsoft launched the Xbox with Kinect and all of these additional things. And I can tell you that barely any of my friends used any of these things. Oculus Rift was bought with Facebook to much fanfare, but it's not an intuitive, it's not... The ergonomics don't make sense at this point to put this giant thing on your face where, and you're going back basically to 30 years ago, that sort of graphic situation. Okay, maybe not 30 years ago, but it's not the type of graphics and gameplay you get from your actual games that you have now on consoles and PCs. It still isn't intuitive and it's not there yet. And they're still working on that. The delivery mechanism's not there yet. But for workouts, I guess if you wanted to do things like, you know, they're boxing where you hold two devices and you're just boxing at a certain speed, it's a stopgap measure in my personal opinion. I don't know whether I'd use virtual reality to replace my workout, but it could be something like, let's say, you had different sensors where you have to attach to each of your limbs, and then you kind of have to do like jumping jacks and stuff like that. Then maybe it's like a guided coach, right? You know, the 80s, you had those videotapes of, what was her name?
Jane Fonda,
yes. So maybe you could do that, and then these sensors kind of guide you through it and tell you, give you that Brad Pitt's voice is giving you that feedback that, oh, Noel, you're not doing it fast enough. You got to quickly move your hands together faster. You know, your form is out.
I'll go talk to Angelina.
Yeah, but I don't know. It requires a lot of investment, and I don't think I want to make that investment when I can just run outside or go to the gym.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? When I look at the VR headsets, particularly when it comes to fitness, okay, what incorporating VR into your fitness regimen would give you, I'm just reminded of those workout videos from the 80s and 90s. Okay, I didn't do the Jane Fonda workouts. I did the Paula Abdul workouts,
the next generation
of aerobic exercises, and you know, I found those, yes, okay, quite absorbing already, because this is the thing, right? We are so used to sitting in front of our television. We can actually get very absorbed into the world of our TV, whether it's through an exercise video, whether it's through gameplay. So what exactly is VR lending to that experience right now, other than probably some kind of heat blister across the bridge of your nose.
And for the additional cost, right? Because mm-hmm. that Jane Fonda video was a one-time purchase. And
I'm not sure. It could have been a subscription. Guessing.
Way before the subscription economy became a thing.
Early subscription models, yeah.
Yes, I think what will happen is when broadband infrastructure improves and more 5G equipment come into the market, the user experience of getting into a VR world will probably improve a lot more, and then you might get more people hooked to it. And there will be that generation of children who will grow up with VR, like just being the next thing for them, right? Like, you know, what iPad would have been for some of us. So, you know, they would, you know, probably lap it up really quickly and take it on quite fast. But I guess there's always, you know, something about, you know, the in-person experience, right? You know, exercising along with someone, a human being in front of you. But I'm sure VR, there are many benefits. I think in the medical field, for example, yeah, I think that would be, you know, understanding our bodies.
Yeah, and telehealth as well, right? There's a lot of talk around how that plays into doctors doing surgery a million miles away. Then it comes to bandwidth, right? Because you can't afford for there to be any lag when a doctor is trying to perform surgery over the internet.
Yes, and especially when you're talking about surgery, right? There is absolutely no room for error at all in the process. So let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin, but first, here is Any Way You Want It by Journey, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Flowers in the Window by Travis, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lindmark Roshan-Kanison and Noel Lim. It's 6:39 a.m, Wednesday the 29th of July, and we're taking a look at some international stories now. Over in Europe, Germany has come out, the head of their public health agency has come out to say that he's very concerned by rising infections in the country. In the past week, Germany's recorded over 3,600 new infections, and they're not the only country in Europe that's struggling with this, because Spain saw their total coronavirus cases also jump by more than 6,000 over the weekend. If we remember, you know, Spain was one of the countries that was originally quite hard hit, but Germany was one of those that started reopening its economy very early. You know, I think they were opened gardening centres and allowed schools to reopen much earlier than even the rest of Europe, much less the world. So it's a little bit concerning to see that they appear to be now heading into a second wave of infections.
Yeah, you know, whenever we talked about this in the early days, there was always an assumption that a second wave would happen. It's just about how bad it would be. Will the healthcare system be able to manage the situation? And, you know, when we're talking about thousands of cases in Europe there, or even more when we talk about the States. But even in Malaysia, this is not something we should take for granted, right? Because mm-hmm. already we're seeing, just yesterday, 39 new COVID-19 cases from two new clusters. This is the highest since we got back to double digits I think it was last week, which is concerning, right? Because when it comes to the COVID-19 numbers, there's a two-week lag approximately. And yesterday, on the back of the court decision, we saw a lot of people in front of the courthouse. And I personally have some concerns over what numbers we'll see in 2 weeks, and then the large implications to the economy. Yeah, sorry, there's a little bit of a winding road there, but essentially, I'm just when you look at all the, I think even Noor Hisham, the health DG, emphasized his concern over the we talked about how 4 busloads were going to support Najib Razak yesterday, right? And that's what we saw yesterday in front of the courthouse.
Yeah, so speaking about that, right, 1,000 people apparently showed up, and these were mainly supporters of Najib. And it was not like, it was not news. I mean, it was already known that a few busloads of people were coming in from Pekan, Pahang and various parts of Malaysia to come in support of Najib. So the authorities knew crowds of people were going to be there. So my question to them is, what were they doing? Why wasn't there enforcement? And why didn't, for example, Dato' Ismail Sabri, why didn't he come out strong to say, okay, social distancing have to apply, you know, wear your mask, you know, things like that. When I look at the photos, like you pointed out, Roshan, I even looked at the videos, I'm like, oh my God, it's like this new cluster is going to be emerging soon.
Yeah, and this is what, sorry, this is what we've got to learn from the Western world at this point, right? We've got to look at what they're doing wrong and adjust to that, because it's important for 100%, it is important to reopen the economy, because you can have a health crisis, but you can also have an economic crisis at the same time. And you want to balance those two factors together. We all have to be responsible as we reopen the economy. But, you know, information isn't dispersed on the same level, right? Because at the same time, we are exposed to information quite often. Not everyone watches Ismail Sabri's press conferences every day, and not everyone reads the news. So how do you disperse that information to everyone?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I kind of wonder how much, to what extent is these rising cases acceptable to governments around the world? Because the important thing here is that your public healthcare system cannot get overwhelmed. And that was the major concern in the initial wave of the infections, that suddenly cases were spiking everywhere, you know, hospitals couldn't cope. I think even now in some parts of India, I think the state of Bihar, for example, they failed to equip their public healthcare system well enough, and it basically collapsed under the strain of the coronavirus cases that they're seeing there still. So you don't want that situation to replicate itself across other countries. But at the same time, we know that we're going to be living with COVID-19 for at least another year or two, right? Yeah. You know, the fear of COVID-19, it's not going to miraculously disappear and we can forget about it in 2 months.
Yeah, so you know, the government needs to be, you know, they just need to step up on communication. If the problem was communication, if people outside Klang Valley were not getting the memo, then, you know, they just need to step up on it, right?
And it's long-term management.
Yes, that's right. And just keep reminding them, wear your face mask, do your social distancing. I remember when Parliament sat, there were so many measures that were put in place, right? Everybody had to be swabbed before they could be allowed in. And look what happened yesterday. It was a circus.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a difficulty, I think, that governments around the world are facing, because there's no handbook that you can follow over best ways to, you know, avoid a second wave of infection. The WHO can come out with their guidelines on when to reopen an economy, but even then, it's very much dependent on the individual country, the society, the culture, as well as how their public health systems are able to stand up to it.
Yeah, and how you change behavior, how you influence them to take on new habits.
Exactly. So do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got some messages coming up for you, and then we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Roxanne by The Police, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. 6:49 a.m., Wednesday the 29th of July. And yesterday was quite the historic day, I think, for Malaysia, because we saw it was the first time an ex-prime minister was ever convicted in the KL High Court. And I think, without fail, that is the front page of every newspaper we have in the studio this morning.
That is indeed true. So I've got The Reserve in front of me, and a very point-blank headline here: Najib gets 12 years in prison, RM 210 million fine in SRC verdict. So this was, of course, around the case around the SRC International, where there were 7 charges, and he was found guilty on all those charges. Now, of course, this is just the first step, and after this, we can expect them to go to the Court of Appeals, and so it's not over yet, right? It's a long road after this. We've seen plenty. The court, it's a milestone, but it's not the end of this journey for Dato' Sri Najat Razak in this one case, because there are other 1MDB cases to be remembered.
Yes, another, I think, 5 cases. But, you know, in some sense, this is really a landmark win, if I may say, for Malaysians, if the evidence was compelling enough for the judge to make this decision. So Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has urged all quarters to continue placing their trust in the nation's judicial system as a free and independent institution. And so he's taken account the verdict. And he also says, I understand the feelings and sentiments of friends on the decision of the court. But he likes to emphasize that the Perikatan National Government will always uphold the rule of law. So good for him. And then Datuk V. Sitambaran, the lead prosecutor in Datuk Sri Najib's case, SRC, he did not mince his words, actually, when he called on the judge to impose a deterrent sentence against the former prime minister. So he is also still going guns blazing to, really get a strong sentence against Najib. And just another thing here, Najib also during that time after the sentence, I think he recited an oath to prove his innocence. And he said that I have never demanded the money or have been offered the 42 million ringgit. And so he recited the verse twice from the dock.
Yes, he was allowed to do that, I think, towards the end of the day there. Now, just to go through his sentence. So there were 7 charges. 1, abuse of power under MACC Act. He got 12 years and a 210 million ringgit fine for that. And that's because it is 5 times, I think it's a minimum of 5 time fine of the amount in the case. 3 charges, criminal breach of criminal breach of trust, 10 years each. 3 charges under the Money Laundering Act, AMLA, 10 years each. Now, if you're wondering why it's 12 years only, it's because they're all concurrent. Happening, all the sentences. But of course, they apply for a stay of execution, and that will, all these will only happen once they go through the Court of Appeals and whatever decision happens there. Because whatever decision, if let's say this is overturned in the Court of Appeals, we can expect this then to go further up the judiciary.
I mean, even if it's upheld in the Court of Appeal, there's not necessarily any guarantee that Dr. Sri Najib won't take it up to the federal court. So,
we can definitely expect this to go all the way.
We can expect this to go all the way. And I think the other point of speculation coming out of this SRC International verdict is what is going to happen to Dato' Sri Najib as MP for Pekan, right? Because he is still a member of parliament. I think the general consensus is that considering that he is going to appeal, he said that they're going to be going to the appeals court hopefully within the next 3 months, he's likely to keep hold of his seat at least until the next general election, until Parliament is next dissolved. Because once Parliament is dissolved, he cannot stand for as a member of Parliament, because he has this conviction currently on his record.
For lack of a better term, he'll be Tian Chuat, basically. He won't be able to run.
Or even like Rafizi Ramli.
Or Rafizi, actually, yeah. And they won't be able to run. And I think you can't run if you have a fine above 2,000 ringgit. He's got a 210 million ringgit fine. So
that's many zeros there.
Just a little higher than 2,000 ringgit.
Just a little bit, yeah.
So I think that's the talk right now, right? Because he will still hold his seat. But if there's a snap election call, what does that do? But even within the ranks of UMNO, I mean, you've got different leaders there with different levels of influence. What does this do to his level of influence within UMNO? Well, you can trust that we will be talking about this with Dr. Bridget Welsh out of the University of Nottingham in about an hour, actually, to get to really get the analysis from this.
Yeah, because members of UMNO were present and several MPs as well at the court yesterday. As I've got the Star in front of me, their headline is Jail for Najib. Very punchy. And their front page is an image of Dato' Sri Najib Razak in the midst of the crush. I think as he was perhaps exiting, I'm not really sure whether it was going or coming at this point. And in the corner, you can see who I'm pretty sure is Dato' Mat Hassan, who's the acting president of UMNO, although it's a little bit hard to tell when half their face is covered by a mask. But
which they should be wearing, of
which
course.
They should be wearing, but which not all MPs were wearing, apparently.
Or, they were all caught on photographs, right?
And it was all circulating on social media. Dato' Hisham has not been pleased.
Yeah, so he tweeted about that. So which brings me to this other piece. So apparently 210 individuals have violated the recovery movement control order, and they have been arrested, according to Dato' Ismail Sabri. That this 210 people were not the people in the crowd. These are people who were in various public spaces. Now, my point is, what were the authorities doing yesterday? I mean, I can see that if the fine was already imposed on not wearing a mask, I'm sure they would have a field day just collecting the money.
Yeah, and you can't blame people for feeling that there's selective enforcement when you have something like this, right? Because considering the fact that this was such a high-profile situation, and we already were talking about how four busloads of people, this 24 hours, we were talking about how four busloads of people were coming in. So there was already a kind of a lead time to that. And while they prevented within the courthouse from people from gathering, outside it was very packed. And it's concerning from a health point of view. I mean, everyone should have the right to freedom of movement and show for causes they want to do and all of that jazz, for sure. But we're in the middle of a health crisis. Law enforcement should have been a bit stricter with the situation there. Maybe just the presence of cops there would have been, I think, more cops there would have been more...
I think they should have just been more prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not just about your freedom of movement, right? Say you are someone who's been placed under quarantine. Yes, you may feel that your freedom of movement has been restricted, but if you go out and you move around amongst unsuspecting people and then you pass them the virus, then, you know, what does that say? What can they say about, hey, you know, my right to a healthy... to be safe and live a healthy life.
Let's not forget that the last time the curve spiked was because of one gathering that really spun out from there.
So 20 over 1,000 people.
Yeah, so yesterday was not as big as that, but it could possibly play into the cases in 2 weeks' time.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. But right now we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. But don't go away. After that, we're going to be bringing you lots more business news and analysis with the serious side of the Morning Run. But right now we have some music. Here is Out of My Head by Fastball, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.